Support Yourself with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine.
And I'm Pavan. Welcome to the 72nd episode of Robots. In today's show, we'll have a look at the next killer application in robotics, telepresence, with two major players in the field. First up, the CEO of Gustai, Jean-Christophe Bailly, presents the Jazz robots, which just hit the market this year.
Our second guest, Trevor Blackwell, presents his company's AnyBots, whose robots were just freshly commercialized. But first, as always, let's listen to the latest news in robotics from Christine.
Thanks, Sabine. Following his recent interview for the Robots podcast, Raoul Rojas at the Freie Universität Berlin has released a video which shows a driver controlling his car using a brain interface. In the video, the driver is wearing an electroencephalogram, or EEG, sold by US company Emotive and primarily intended as a gaming device. When reaching an intersection, the driver can command the car to turn left or right without touching the steering wheel. The work is part of Rojas' Made in Germany project that aims at building autonomous cars and continues Rojas' exploration of different human-car interfaces, including an iPhone, iPad, and an eye-tracking device. US company AeroVironment has announced the achievement of a technical milestone for their Hummingbird robot. The robot, which weighs a mere 20 grams, or about as much as a standard letter, including onboard camera and batteries, achieved control precision hovering and fast forward flight of a two-wing, flapping wing aircraft that carries its own energy source and uses only the flapping wings for propulsion and control. The final concept demonstrator is called the Nano Hummingbird and will be capable of climbing and descending vertically, flying sideways left and right, flying forward and backward, as well as rotating clockwise and counterclockwise under remote control and carrying a video camera payload. During the demonstration, the Nano Hummingbird flew in and out of a building through a normal-sized doorway. For more information on the Made in Germany project or the Nano Hummingbird, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Thanks, Christine. Jean-Christophe Bailly is the CEO of Gustai, a French-based company that we've interviewed in the past about their Urbi software platform. Turns out, they've put all this software know-how into their new endeavor, a telepresence robot named Jazz.
Hi, Jean-Christophe. Welcome to Robots.
Hi, Sabine.
It's a pleasure to have you back on our show. Our last discussion was about Urbi, the software platform, and today we're actually going to talk about hardware. So why did you go into hardware?
So this is a good question because this is quite surprising for many people to see that we have moved from software to hardware, and quite unexpected. In fact, we've been working on this for something like more than 2 years in a quite confidential way, so nobody knew about what we were doing. And the reason is simple, is that we're doing great with Urbi. There's a lot of opportunities, a lot of clients, and we have people from either Korea or the U.S. that are working with us, and new people coming regularly. But we're growing, and we're now more than 20 people, and we needed to find new way to extend our potential revenue. And in fact, software for robotics, I think, is we still believe that it is a very promising avenue to create and generate revenue. But we needed to be in front with the market and to have our own offers. This is something we realized, as I said, a few years ago, and we decided to go this way. So the cool thing is that, of course, we got a lot of feedback from a lot of experience from our interaction with manufacturers. So we know what are the difficulties when you try to build a robot. And so it helps us to go a bit faster and perhaps to avoid some pitfalls in the design of the robot. And of course, we benefited from all the software layers that we have done for others, and we applied them to our own robot, which also saved time and allowed us to do things faster and perhaps with less error, trial and error in the process. So that's what we are. The idea is to go directly to the market and to offer a completely integrated solution, including software, interfaces, and of course the robot with a designated purpose and use cases that are identified for the user.
And why telepresence robots?
So, in fact, we have been looking at what might be, the potential next big application beyond the vacuum cleaners. If you see what I mean. I mean, this is one of the big successes of robotics, and everybody is, scratching his head to find out what could be the next big thing in robotics. And I think we are not the only one. And, having identified this telepresence market as an interesting one, and so basically this is this choice is the result of an analysis of the market and what were the opportunities. It seems that telepresence is one of those.
In what type of situations do you see these telepresence robots being used?
In fact, there are many situations. What I think is that we are facing a new communication media, if you want, something new that you can use to communicate with people and exchange and just like telephones or Facebook or emails. This kind of innovation has a huge potential because people will take this tool and do things that we don't expect with it. But if we look today at what seems to be obviously a kind of use for this kind of robot, we have, of course, teleworking. So the idea to be able to keep contact with your team when you're not in your company or in your office and you're in a distant place, but then you can still be there. So it's not like Skype, it's not like a video conference. When you have a video conference, you set up a topic, you set up a time, and there's a place usually because there's a room dedicated for that. So it's not exactly the same thing. You are actually physically represented and present in a distant place, and you can move around and interact with things around you. So this is completely different, and it makes the connection between the teleworker and the team much more strong. If we take an example, we have somebody who is working in the south of France. As you know, we are in Paris, in France. So one of our engineers is working in the south of France. And before, when we didn't have a robot, he was using Skype, but not so often. So, in fact, he was not really connected to the team anymore. So it was just from time to time that we had a call. And now it's changing completely because he's physically represented by a robot. He can go to one of his colleagues and ask about something in a very informal way, and then go back to another one and just carry on his work. And when something comes up, he can just move to the people and ask. It's not so formal. It's much more smooth, if you want, as an interaction. So this is one example. And, of course, there are others that are also identified, like telemedicine, because it can be a doctor who is doing this. In the other way around, it can be somebody who is in the hospital who wants to keep contact with his family or his work, and so he needs to be projected, if you want. We like the idea of teleportation. This is a little bit science fiction-like, but I think it illustrates the concept fairly well. So you could be in a hospital and try to teleport yourself in your location, in your home or in your work, to keep the contact with people. There are also applications for remote maintenance. You have a factory, you want to send an expert there to see, to investigate a failure or something that is not working so well. Usually you take an airplane, and then it costs a lot of time and money. You can imagine in certain cases that a telepresence robot would be just enough to identify the problem and decide whether you really need to take an airplane and go there. So, in fact, you can justify the purchase of such a robot simply by calculating how many flights you're going to save by simply using a robot instead.
Okay, let's dive into the concrete. What does this Jazz robot look like?
Okay, First, I think it's really cute. It's a nice robot. Well, we've used it in showrooms, and people are immediately, going towards it. It's about 1 meter high. It's either white or black. You can see it on our website if you go to gostai.com. It has something that I think is quite unique, or I haven't seen it much. It's an articulated head, so it can actually move the head in any direction and look at you, which immediately creates, something very strong. There's something, with the idea of being looked at with two eyes that is probably fairly, deeply rooted into our brain that makes it immediately appealing. So that's exactly what it does. It is equipped with all the sensors you can expect, proximity sensors. We have a version that has a laser rangefinder, so it can also do simultaneous localization and mapping and these kind of things, so it can navigate autonomously. We are working on a version with a screen that will be in the head, so you can see, of course, what is for telepresence is especially useful. You can see the face of the person who is controlling the robot, or you can show documents or whatever you want. It's a screen. And what are the other things? It does not have hands or things like that, but you can put a tray on it, so you can remove it, so it can actually carry some lightweight items like papers or some cookies or things like that. So that describes it. It's not too high, so it's not something that's going to be imposing. I think it's important that it doesn't look too much aggressive, in a sense. Aggressive, of course, not in the design, but also not in the size or how big it could be. It's only about 10 kilos, so you can easily transport it and move it around wherever you want. So this is a choice we've made. We're well aware that there are other competitors who have chosen some different things, like very very tall robots or bigger robots that looks very heavy or almost a secure robot that you cannot move without the robot being powered or things like that. So it's very hard to know which one is going to get these things right. But we think that the choices we've made are focused on making the robot easy to move, easy to accept in the environment, and not being too imposing. Which is a choice that we defend.
How important is this design? Because I imagine if you're a boss, you want maybe an imposing telepresence robot, whereas I guess if you're a security robot, a different type. I mean, how important is the design of this robot to actually embody a person?
Well, it's an interesting question because it depends, as you said, about the kind of use we have in mind. If you have a security robot, of course, it's not a problem that it's imposing and it's a big robot. So what we do for the security robot is that we tend to suggest to use the black version, which is a little bit more threatening, if you want. But the point is not really to scare the intruder. We are not doing military robots. It's not like it's going to resist to an attack, an assault, or anything. So the point is to. The first time the person sees the robot, what he's going to see is something black coming towards him or her, with a very powerful LED lights in the eyes. So we have used extremely powerful lights that are actually blinding, and it can make a lot of noise. This is enough, and I don't think we should go any further, because the robot will not be able to resist an attack by somebody who really wants to break it. And if it is broken, then we know this, of course, because the communication is cut. And this is a very, very good and interesting information. Somebody has, shot the robot or disconnected the robot in any way. So I think it's not like for security we really want to make a kind of a military offensive robot that will prevent physically the intrusion. It's not just about scaring a little bit people and, of course, getting you a way to see what's going on, or even if you cannot see anything, this is a very good sign that there's something wrong and you can send the police. So this is one thing. And then for telepresence, we don't want the robot to be mixed. Well, you need to see clearly that this is a robot. This is not pretending to be like a human being or humanoid. This is the extreme, of course. Nobody is doing that. But you might think that it could be an interesting direction, and I don't think so. I think it should be looking like a device, something that is a machine that you can use. And it's not supposed to be replacing, for example, your boss or your colleague. It is just a representation. It is not so high. So, for example, in the typical environment of an office, you are sitting at your desk. You're not standing. So when the robot is coming to you, it is at the right height for you to interact with it. So that's about, different aspects of the design that we can discuss. But you see, for security, for telepresence, there are different elements. And I don't think that it should be too humanoid or trying too hard to be, looking like a surrogate. Perhaps you've seen this movie, Surrogate, with Bruce Willis. So it's a good example of perhaps what we should not do. So,
did you get any feedback from the users? Are they able to forget the robot, even though it does look like a robot, and just focus on the human interactions?
Do you mean the user of the robot or the people around the robot?
The people around the robot.
So far, we have not enough feedback in telepresence because we are just launching about now. Well, first, we are just launching the robot itself since January. So you see, it's been like a month. And now we are just launching the version with a screen, which is the typical version that people use in telepresence. But still, we have some feedback from about 10 clients that we've been working with. Some of them have bought the robot for security, and interestingly, they use it for telepresence. It's interesting how they change their mind about how they want to use it. And I think we will be surprised, even in telepresence, to see how people actually use it in ways that are rather unexpected. So no, we don't have a lot of feedback now to tell you this. But the thing that we have a lot is feedback from people who are visiting us. And of course, when they are sitting in the office with us, we have a robot that suddenly comes in the room and, for example, brings the coffee or things like that. And you can see immediately that they are very interested and they really like the concept. So the feedback is excellent. Now we don't have field feedback so far. So perhaps in about 5 to 6 months, we will be able to learn from this kind of experience.
This robot bringing the coffee, how autonomous is it?
The autonomy, you mean in terms of how long it can run, or?
No, in terms of what does the robot make its decisions and what extent does it have to be manually controlled?
For the coffee, in our case, we just have somebody who is actually remote controlling it, so we don't want to have improvisation. But the thing is that, as I said, there is a model that is equipped with a laser rangefinder. So as you can then use some fairly well-known algorithms to have the robots navigate autonomously in an office. You can set waypoints and it will follow the series of waypoints. It can also build a map automatically of the environment, and then you can use this map to direct it in the second stage. So these are fairly well-known and mature technologies to have the robot autonomous and capable of either taking high-level orders, like going to a certain room or going to a certain person that is standing in a certain room, or is able to do some autonomous patrolling. So for the coffee example, we could imagine that you have a secretary who is preparing the coffee, putting them on the plate, and then just pressing a button, and then the robot goes directly automatically to the office of the boss, for example, to deliver the coffee. This is it's feasible today without any problem.
There are a lot of companies making telepresence robots right now. What does the market look like?
Well, it looks like first U.S. centered. The many companies you're citing, I suppose we're thinking about the same companies. Most of them are in the U.S. So this is quite interesting. There are some attempts also in Korea, but perhaps not so visible. I haven't seen something in Russia recently. So the market looks excited about this opportunity. There's a lot of things that that appear. It looks a bit like I would say the beginning of this is something, you know, we say perhaps too often, but it is true. It looks a bit like the beginning of computers, where you have different form factors, different approaches that are proposed, and it's very hard to imagine which one is going to get it right, because this is really, really new. And in fact, this is also making the promotion of this concept so important and sometimes difficult, because people don't really know what it is. We've seen that it takes some time for people to understand exactly what it is about. Anyway, so the market looks promising, and so far in Europe, I think we are among the few companies, if not the, at least in France, the only one for sure, that is proposing this kind of technology.
And are the clients more in the U.S. and in Asia?
I think they could be anywhere. Anywhere where you have somebody who's, let's say, a company with more than 50 people with different locations in this company, or a company with industrial sites, which is outsourcing some of its production, for example. All these examples are a good example of potential clients. So, and if you include security, then you get practically you know, every company that has assets to protect that would be interested. Of course, you have to exclude the companies that have already a security system, because well, they will be more difficult to convince in the first stage, I think. But no, I think the really interesting thing is this market is not limited to a certain geography. Like, if you go for certain types of robotics, like, I don't know, perhaps entertainment robotics, there will be perhaps more possibilities in countries that are more robot-friendly, like Japan or Korea. No, in that case, it's really, we're talking about a tool that is useful, that people can use to do things, and that is going to save them money, clearly, if they avoid traveling, for example. And so this is a language that is understood by anyone. It's clearly not a localized market.
Can the head of the robot turn 360? The reason I'm asking is that I can imagine people go behind their boss's avatar and just make funny faces.
Yes, well, it's well, you can turn the body, of course. So then you have well, when in the interface, the interesting thing is the interface we offer. So you can just click on any place of the image. So if you click several times, you can actually turn the head, not completely, but then the body follows, and then you can go around. Well, it's not the really the intended use. Or for example, also to have, we could imagine to have, you know, these cameras that are panoramic cameras that goes all around. Well, no, it's not the case yet.
Okay. Final question. What will be your future steps at GhostEye with the Jazz series? Mm-hmm.
So we have many plans, things that will be revealed during the year. The first thing that is clear, and I have stated already, is that we are working on a screen version. This is obviously necessary when you're interested in telepresence. Not all the time. I think there are cases where you know very well who is behind the robot and don't really care to see his face. Just like, you know, the debate between video conference and simple phone call. You don't always need to see the person. So I think there's a future in the market for screenless telepresence robots, which of course are going to be cheaper, so that's an interesting point. By the way, the price is at 7,900 for the screenless version, so you see it's fairly aggressive, not too expensive price for B2B market. And then we're going to release a version with a screen in the coming month. There will be an important event that is happening in Lyon at the end of March. I think it's 23rd to 25th of March, which is called InnoRobo. And InnoRobo is, if you want, a European summit or conference about robotics, a bit similar to IREX or robot business, but it's taking place in Europe, and it's taking place this year it's taking place in Lyon in France, and we are going to show this new version and innovations that we are working on at InnoRobo in March. So I strongly suggest that you look at this conference, because there will be people from everywhere in the world, it's an international conference. There will be Korean, U.S. There will be a keynote by Colin Engel, so from the CEO of iRobot. And it's going to be a really interesting moment to see you know, where robotics is going and all the innovation that everybody has to show.
Okay, excellent. Thanks a lot, Jean-Christophe, for being here with us on Robots again.
Thank you very much. And, well, I hope it was a pleasure to talk to you again about the new things we are working on for this new year.
Trevor Blackwell is the CEO of Silicon Valley company AnyBots. We'll be talking about his telepresence robots that some of you may have seen ordering scones in a local cafe. Interestingly, AnyBots only have two wheels and self-balance, using a mechanism that's similar to the Segway. This makes sense since Trevor is also the inventor of several other balancing vehicles, including the two-wheeled balancing scooter and the self-balancing unicycle, which only has one wheel. Hi, Trevor. Welcome to Robots.
Hi.
Can you please present yourself to our listeners?
Well, I'm Trevor Blackwell, the founder and CEO of AnyBots, a company designed to make telepresence robots.
Why telepresence robots?
Because I think telepresence is going to be the killer app of robotics. That, you know, and that's happened for many technologies in the past, where communicating ended up being the main thing. You know, people don't mainly use computers for crunching numbers or computing things. They mainly use them for email and Facebook. And so a similar thing is going to happen with robots, that robots in the home and office are going to be mainly used to interact with other people.
Okay, let's dive more into the actual AnyBots. What do these robots look like? What are their sensors and their actuators?
Well, they're about 5.5 feet tall and weigh 35 pounds. They get around on a two-wheeled base that balances, kind of like a Segway. And up top is a head that has a video camera, a monitor, a microphone, and a speaker. So when you are logging into it, you log into it from a web browser. And then you can see what's in front of the robot. You can hear, you can talk, you can show your face on the LCD screen on the robot. And so if you're working from home or working remotely on some day, you can drive the robot around the office and sort of roll up to people's desks just like you would walk up to their desk when you're there in person. And so in an office where it's not just people, but where there are, you know, where there's a lab, where there's a you know, inventory, where there's a retail space, it gives you the kind of access you need to do your job remotely.
Why did you choose these two wheels instead of maybe a more stable base?
Somewhat surprisingly, the two-wheeled base is much more stable than a three- or four-wheeled base because it actively balances. So you can give the robot quite a strong push, and it will you know, react and kind of back up and come back. Whereas, you know, anything that tall on a sort of smallish four-wheeled base, you know, a base that can get through doorways, ends up being kind of tippy.
We saw your robot going outdoors. How dependent is it on Wi-Fi?
It uses either Wi-Fi or the cellular network, 3 or 4G cellular. So when we were going outdoors, we were using a cellular network.
Do you have an alarm when the robot goes too far or something?
No. You know, if you start driving out of Wi-Fi range, you'll notice that the video starts getting choppy, that's kind of your signal to back up a little bit.
Okay. The other thing I was wondering is how autonomous is it? And by that I mean, can it actually avoid obstacles on its own, et cetera?
Yeah. So the autonomous behavior is all very low level. So it doesn't, you know, go anywhere and do anything on its own. But it does have a bunch of reflexes built in, such as, you know, if you're heading for a wall, it will stop. If you're about to bump into a person, it will stop. If you're heading for a doorway, but you didn't line it up quite right, and you might be about to bump into one side or the other, it will fix that by jogging and go through the door correctly.
I noticed on your website that you're preparing an interface, basically, where people can log in and drive robots around at your company. How are you seeing this work?
Well, we're very curious to see how that works when we launch it. You know, we've let a number of people we know drive robots around our office, but we've never tried the experiment yet of just letting the general public in. I think that'll be an interesting first few days when we try it.
Do you know when it'll be available?
It should be in mid-March available.
Okay, I'll log in definitely. So we know telepresence robots can be used in many types of environments. We've seen office environments, hospitals, warehouses. And in your blog, you mentioned some fun ones, such as ordering scones or even flirting with baristas. Do you have any, like, fun applications? What are some of the most intriguing applications that you guys have thought of?
I think what surprises us is how often we use it over a very short distance. So, you know, initially when we thought about telepresence robots, we thought, well, you know, maybe our factory's in China and this will save us a 14-hour plane trip. But we find, you know, we often fire up a robot within the office, just like you might remember the first time you sent an email to someone that was in the same office as a, you know, new frivolous use of email. And we find we, you know, if we're in the front room of the office, we'll sometimes fire up a robot in the back room to tell someone to come and see us.
Did you ever imagine the scenario where the robot's at home and not in the office? Because usually they always put these robots in the workplace and not the other way around, having the person in the workplace and the robot at home.
Well, I have one at home.
Oh, okay.
And I find it useful. My executive assistant logs into it regularly and, you know, tells me what's on for that day. It's a little expensive, the current version, for most home users. But you know, as new lower price models come out, I think that'll be common too.
And on the business, in what applications do you see these AnyBots being used more often?
I think the most common uses are going to be interacting between work groups in different buildings. So, you know, in most modern large companies, they have lots of buildings, often in different countries, because they need, you know, labor or talent pools from many places in the world. So the most common use now is, you know, just working between two offices or someone working from their home office.
How important do you think the design of this robot is? Because it is supposed to represent a person. So what thought has gone into that?
When you're working remotely through a robot, that robot is your representative, and so it projects your professional appearance. And so it's very important that it be, you know, present enough to be commanding, but not, you know, loud or clunky and annoying, and that it be, you know, at a reasonable eye level so you can look people in the eye. And you know, those are things that we've discovered from a lot of testing, both with ourselves and with other people, that, you know, people were very sensitive to eye level. You know, that if you put people that are used to being 6 foot tall at a 4.5 foot eye level, they don't feel comfortable at all.
Do you already have feedback from the users? Are they able to forget this robot in the interaction?
Yes, we're actually surprised by how quickly people kind of forgot about the robot and just had the conversation they wanted to have, usually within 30 seconds. And, you know, in a way that was slightly disappointing to us, like we built this very interesting robot and, you know, 30 seconds into using it, people had sort of forgotten about it. But really that is the goal, that it's all about communications and it shouldn't get in the way of things.
There's a lot of companies making telepresence robots that just started this year. What do you think the market looks like, and where are you aiming to sell these robots?
I think in the long term, the market for telepresence systems that move will be as large or larger than telepresence systems that are fixed, that are bolted to the wall, like most current video conference equipment. So that's a several billion dollar market now, and you think, you know, mobile telepresence systems or telepresence robots are going to be a similar size market.
Can you give us a glimpse at what your future steps will be for AnyBots?
We want to develop robots that let people do any job remotely. So far, the robots let you do jobs that don't require your hands, you know, that are really just about talking to people and looking at things. Definitely the future evolution is, you know, making it possible to do just about any job remotely that requires hands or, you know, high visual acuity and, you know, whatever people's jobs need, we want to address that.
If your robots actually do end up having hands, have you been thinking of the legal aspects? Because I can imagine that things become trickier then.
The way we've always thought of it is just, you know, it's a tool that you use to do your job. And so, you know, people are expected to be responsible with their tools, just like they have to be responsible with their cars and forklifts. And it doesn't make a lot of difference whether you're there or somewhere else. You know, if you're using a tool, you have to use it sensibly.
The people that work at AnyBots, are they all roboticists?
I think we have two people with a real robotics background, but most of us are from all kinds of different backgrounds. My background is internet software. We have another guy who's a mechanical engineer and visual artist, one guy whose background is puppetry. So it's a wide range.
Thanks, Trevor, for being here with us on Robots.
My pleasure.
That's it for today's episode of Robots. For more information on our guests, have a look at our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Teleport yourself with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.